Welcome to SDI Encounters, a podcast from Spiritual Directors International. I'm Matt Whitney. Thank you so much for listening. I offer a heartfelt welcome to new listeners and a welcome back to existing subscribers. If you like this show, please do click on the subscribe button. Here we offer a wide range of perspectives, stories, and conversations centered around community, spiritual companionship, and spiritual care. You'll find additional information, including videos, webinars, and digital publications at our website, sdiworld.org. We really do believe here at SDI that spiritual companionship is world-changing. Spiritual companions listen into being the stories of one another, discerning the ways that spirit manifests in each of our lives, working to cultivate a sense that we all belong and we are all participating in the deep mysteries of divine life. And one of the clearest voices within SDI speaking of the transformational nature of this work is Ravi Verma. I've been doing podcast interviews with a few of SDI's transitioning coordinating council members. It's an opportunity to hear from our leadership and gain a bit of insight into the inner workings of the organization. Recently, we did an interview with longtime council member Bruce Calvin. And in this episode, I talk with Ravi Verma, who is a spiritual director based in Los Angeles and has served on SDI's coordinating council for 6 years. With the past two serving as chair. He's been a leader and a steady presence at SDI for a long time and probably will continue to be a steady presence and leader for years to come. Ravi's dedicated his life to the work of spiritual companionship and has given so much to this organization, living out his belief that this life-changing modality can transform us and can change the world. Ravi, thank you so much for your time today. It's good to see you.
Yeah, same here.
I haven't seen you since the conference. I hope you've been well.
I have, thank you. Summer is a less busy time, so it's been very good.
Yeah, I can imagine it's been less busy. You are the chair of the coordinating council for SDI, and I understand that you have just stepped down from that, having served your term of 3 years. So have you been on?
I was on the council for 6 years.
You're on for 6 years, yeah.
And I think I was chair for the last two or two and a half. I don't remember.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So how has that been, that transition for you?
I loved being on the council. I have been part of SDI and on the council has been an absolutely wonderful, enriching, enlivening experience for me. And, you know, I had mixed feelings about leaving, to be honest.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it. Don't go!
It was a great community and I was part of the transition between executive directors and part of hiring Seifu to his position and seeing the changes and the new directions we are going in while keeping what we've so richly had has been very exciting. And I think the future holds that too. I also know it's time. There are other people who need to take on that mantle, and I'll be involved in different ways.
Good. That's good to hear.
It's a transition.
Yeah. Let's back up a little bit. You know, first of all, thank you so much for your service to this organization and for being a leader and for being a steady presence through the midst of transitions. You know, as you explained, through the hiring of a new executive director and through the iteration of the organization itself at this time, how did you first come to SDI? And when was that? And how did you find SDI? I presume it relates to your work as a spiritual director, so you can approach that any way that you want.
Sure. Give you the 2-minute history. Spirituality and that has always been something that has drawn me. I grew up in India post-partition, and my parents were Hindus who had to flee from what is now Pakistan. And so I grew up with Hinduism, with lots of Muslim friends, went to school run by Jesuits. So I grew up in this really rich religious environment. And there was something in all of those that drew me. I didn't have words for it even when I was growing up. But I drifted into a different career. I got my engineering degree and got my MBA, both my master's degrees here. There was always this search for deeper. And I changed careers, gave up the corporate world to work with religious nonprofits. And through my own transitions, 3 or 4 different tragedies in my own life, even while working with religious nonprofits, led me to spiritual direction. I started seeing a spiritual director for many years, but never, it took a while for me to really uncover, this is what I love doing. This is what I've been doing in different ways for a long time. And once I found that out, I plunged into it. I went through 2 different formation programs at the same time while working full time. But it really shifted my life. Mm. It shifted the lens of who I am and what I'm doing. And so it was through my own spiritual director and the formation programs I heard about spiritual directors in national. And the first conference I went to was here in Costa Mesa in Southern California. And I just fell in love with SDI. And so I can't remember how long ago, it may have been 18 years ago, my first conference, and I joined, and I've been at least to the last 12 or 14 conferences. I can't remember, actually. So it's been a part of my life for a very long time. And as I went through my evolution from one field to the other, I found my community in SDI and in the world of spiritual companions. I found friends, peers. I found education and ways in which enhanced what I do. And I found it to be a vehicle for helping transform the world. That's a very minor goal.
But to transform the world, that's a secondary issue.
But yeah, that kind of companionship, that kind of spiritual nurturing, that kind of access to resources has been such a big part of my life. And I wanted to give back. So when they started asking me to be on the council, in the beginning, I kept saying no because I wanted to take in more and more. But eventually, I did say yes. And you know, I'll be involved with SDI in one way or another for a long time.
Where do you see SDI going in the future? I mean, you have been a part of the organization for a good number of years and experienced a number of conferences and have been on leadership. Where do you sense that SDI is going as an organization? Where do you hope it goes?
Yeah, it's a great question, you know, and SDI from the very beginning has been open to change. From the very beginning, you know, even though it started, had its roots in more a Catholic tradition, it was always, and from the very beginning, very ecumenically minded, that all different Christian groups who were welcome. And then they had to take another step that all other religions were welcome. So from the very beginning, there was this widening of the tent. Then they had to really make a commitment towards it being more international. And a commitment, and that's how the name was Spiritual Directors International. Now, some of this history I've learned through talking to people, reading about it, but the genesis of it was always this expanding tent for spiritual companions, for spiritual directors. And I think with Seifu coming, we've reached different levels of that. And I see that transition happening. One, for the first time, we have a lot more people from other traditions who are coming. We have a lot more emphasis on diversity, especially with people of color. We have a long way to go, but it's growing in that. One of the things from the very beginning, Marianne Schofield, in one of the articles she wrote, talked about how in spiritual companionship, we are really good about building community, helping people connect to the mystery, to the divine, but not as good as the social dimension in that, what is our role to transform the world? And she said that that has to be part of formation programs, that has to be part of what spiritual companions do, both in their own lives, but also encouraging their directees to find their own way to do that. So in the last decade, you know, the world is going through so much turmoil that several of us felt the need to refocus on that aspect. And there were some spiritual directors who have always done that.
Yeah.
So we really started, we had an institute, we did workshops on activism and spiritual direction. SDI did webinars. One key one was, you know, what does it mean to be a socially conscious spiritual director? And now that aspect is also very integrated into SDI in its workshops and the articles and its outreach and the statements we make, that we are part of helping transform the world. So, you know, those issues of, and as we get people from different traditions, they have different understandings of what spiritual companionship, different ways of doing it, different standards. So we have to learn each other's languages. So how do we move into that while preserving what we've had? Because, for example, the way a Buddhist teacher might practice spiritual companionship is different from our Hindu guru might do it, or the Jesuits might do it. So we have to continue to find common ground and common language. And I think it's there. It's inherent in that mystery, in the deep listening, in walking with someone. But it'll be a journey. And as we deal with diversity issues, like many other organizations, we'll have to deal with those issues. What does it mean to be culturally and religiously sensitive to those differences? So those will be the opportunities and challenges. And also, how do we keep the balance between high tech and high touch? This work is very intimate work. And technology can really help. And SDI really is doing a lot of work with technology through webinars, podcasts like these. But there is also that real need for companionship. And how do we do all that together?
Yeah. Support for this podcast comes from Spiritual Companionship for Our Times, SDI's annual gathering of spiritual companions happening in Santa Fe, New Mexico, April 23rd through 26th, 2020. Registrations are now open with super early bird pricing available through September 15th. We'll be celebrating SDI's 30th anniversary and charting the road ahead as we seek to welcome more and more people to the transformational gifts of spiritual companionship and to make this healing modality available to every person on the planet. Learn more now about our annual conference at www.sdievents.org. And now here's part two of our conversation.
Does that answer?
These are great questions. That is one I have not even, I mean, the technology piece is something, I think of it from as a media, from a media standpoint, right? Just how do we disseminate the work of spiritual companionship? How do we spread the word? How do we, for lack of a better term, market spiritual companionship? And so there's all these avenues for doing that. But the question of how technology also plays a direct role in spiritual companionship and how does that affect the intimacy and the vulnerability of the relationship? That's an important question. I also want to ask you about, and I may come back to that. Well, I want to ask you first about the learning from one another that you were discussing about finding common ground and learning from one another's practices from different faith, religious, or no spiritual formational background. Why is that so vital to what we do? What is the importance of that beyond just a curiosity? I think that there is an urgency to that, to the need to listen to one another and learn from people who are different from us, who have different traditions from us, different upbringings from us, different cultural backgrounds from us, not just to learn more about these various different cultures and backgrounds. But I want to let you answer that. So can you speak to that a little bit? The importance of diversity for SDI.
Right. See if this answers or gets to some of that. It's a great question, you know, and we all in leadership struggle with that. You know, there are many people, we can have a spiritual connection with mystery, with divine on our own, and people do that, you know. But I know that on my own, I can delude myself very easily. I need another person to be with me as a peer, as a friend, as a director, to help me see things from a different lens, to see what I am blind to about myself and my own experience and my own history and cultural limitations. So just from the aspect of connecting to that mystery and going deeper to that true self, I have to do that in community, because on my own, I am limited in that. So just from the very foundational work of what we are doing, we need each other, because we are sometimes blind to ourselves. So that's one aspect of why we need each other, and which is why SDI is so important, that as it helps people connect and network and learn from each other. It broadens our perspective, it deepens our own journey to do that. The other aspect of why we connect with people who are different or of different traditions or different cultures or races or genders or sexualities is our world is getting so small. We are living in a world that we are exposed to all these differences, and there is so much of the turmoil in the world about people exploiting those differences, setting one group against another, about the targeting one group and victimizing some groups. All those things are rampant. I'm sure there are times in history where this has happened before, but this is our time.
Yeah.
And in almost in so many countries in the world, different forms of this kind of xenophobia is rising and rising to do that. And so the kind of work we do of understanding each other, the depth of our experience, to connect at that level can help change the world. That's what I mean by that this kind of work is so important. If I can sit across from someone who's very different, for example, there's traditionally this whole history of setup of Hindus and Muslims. But if I can connect with another Muslim at the level of that soul connection, of that depth, we can transcend all the history and the differences. And that can make a difference in the world. And so how we learn from other traditions, how we learn from each other, how we hear each other into being in a new way, I think is so critical. And that is why I am proud. I am really an evangelist for spiritual companionship and the importance of this kind of work.
Yeah. I'm also an evangelist. We are both evangelists together. I wonder, you speak so beautifully about the role spiritual companionship can play in the healing of some of the pain that we are experiencing here now in 2019, culturally and politically. And I hear very deeply from you the sense that as a spiritual director, the work is vital to assist in that healing. What can a spiritual companion do to break out of their metaphorical cloister, right? The sense that, say I'm like a white Christian and I tend my own flock of other white Christians, and we're sort of in a feedback loop together, right? Or an echo chamber. But there's a sense, there's a heart that, the spiritual companion wants to help in the mending, in the knitting, in the healing of a broken world. Do you have any advice or suggestions for spiritual companions who want to be part of this dialogue of oneness and diversity, not just for the sake of tolerance, and because as you said, the world is getting smaller, we better learn to get along, but to actually, what I would say is create a culture that is truly loving and accepting, so that they're, I'll just leave it at that for now.
I agree with you. How do we create a culture that's more loving, more open to this? And, I don't have all the answers for this. I'm on this journey myself. So it's, again, we all have to do this together. I know some of it. What I'm finding out is I have to do my own work. I have to be in touch with areas where I have privilege, areas in which I am oppressed. And each of us has areas like that. I have to understand how power and privilege work. And I've been willing to face my own shadow and my own healing in that. It has to start there. And that's also a place you can't do it alone. We need each other to be loving and hold each other accountable for that work. So I would say find companions who are also interested in this. Look at what ways in which you and I need to do that work for ourselves. Mm-hmm. One of the things I did, mostly because I wanted it here in Los Angeles, and it took a long time to get it together, I got groups of activists who were very much on the front lines working for social change, whether in organizations or through legal or through protest, in all kinds of ways, and spiritual directors, spiritual companions, who for some and many were, my thing is I am going to pray and I'm going to support these people, but that's not mine to do. So I got groups together to start dialoguing, to sitting and learning from each other. And we did find we had more in common. And we learned how spiritual companions can be part of making change and how much activists also need to go deeper and have spiritual practices that ground them. And this is not new information, but the dialogue helped us hear each other and build community with each other that we could do this together. It was an experiment. We had two big gatherings and several planning meetings. But it's that kind of thing. Start where you can. Even if it means calling up someone who's different from you and saying, can we get together for coffee? It could be as simple as that. Mm-hmm. To take some discern with your own spiritual companion and director, what is yours to do to move in this direction? I think that work is critical, that each of us has to see, what do I have to do? Hmm. And then we have to honor each other's conclusions from that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, on a very practical level, it makes sense. I think you have a way of bringing things out of the abstract into the, here is how to do them, right? Call somebody, invite someone out for coffee who is different from you. You don't have to know them, but you do have to be a little bit brave, right? And get over your shyness. Or maybe it's just that first step of like finding a meeting with a spiritual director for the first time. That I avoided for a while. It was like, and I worked here, for at least a year. And I was like, I don't know. But it's just, I think we all face those moments where it's like, okay, I'm just going to have to extend myself beyond myself in order to make something happen here. And finding a small way and not expecting it to be like magically transforming immediately. Like you said, some things take planning and some things can just be awkward, but allowing, a little bit of grace for that awkwardness. And
To me, seeing my spiritual director, and I have seen mine regularly for many, many years, is a spiritual practice. It's something that helps ground me, that's something that helps, that nourishes me, and there are other things that help, but that is a crucial part of it for me. Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I was asking you this question previously about why a spiritual companion would want to, embrace more diversity in their life, see themselves as more of a healer for the greater good and the greater world, as opposed to just one-on-one. And where I was going, and then I caught myself, I was going to say, how does somebody no longer see the other? That's what I was going to say. How could somebody come to a point where they no longer see the other? And I stopped myself. Ooh. Because I didn't want to sound stupid, but I also don't know that that's a possibility. But I think what came to me as you were talking about the need to identify your own privileges, the ways in which one is also oppressed, and also doing one's own, what we would describe as shadow work, and self-care, right? Learning to forgive oneself for a lot of ways. And what came to me when you were describing that is just maybe beginning to see oneself as other, or the parts of oneself that is that is not self.
Right.
And doing a little bit of work. Does that, I don't know, how does that sound to you? I mean, I may be off course.
Well, I think that's a great question, Matt, because it's, for me, connecting to that mystery, doing this work and doing my practices brings me to a place of not just acceptance, but compassion of all parts of myself.
Yeah.
That all of me, just, you know, there's this old Christian hymn, just as I am, is good, is acceptable, is fine. That doesn't mean there are things that need to be shifted, changed, transformed. But that guilt and shame of, it goes away, you know? It becomes, I am accepted, I am whole. And I can live with those parts of myself that are still needing more healing. But they're part of who I am. And all of me is accepted and loved. All. No exceptions.
Yes, no exceptions. And that, I mean, when we talk about self-compassion and how important that is, I think it's easy for somebody to bristle at that and feel like, well, you know, I don't want to be a narcissist or like self-absorbed, you know, there's people to love. But like, if you can't love yourself, how are you going to love other people? If you can't practice compassion for the things that are, you know, that are dark in you, if you can't be like, right, all of me is okay, I'm working on the other things, but I'm okay, you know, how do we begin to do that for other people?
Yeah, there can be that tendency to excuse bad behavior, if you will, to do that, or to be too soft about that. But I'm talking about something that comes from the depth of that experience. To find that acceptance. And, you know, in some ways, that's what we all are looking for, that kind of love, that acceptance, that belonging, both of all parts of ourselves and to something bigger than ourselves. Yeah.
Yeah. And it comes back to, I know we're drinking the Kool-Aid here, but back to having a spiritual director, which, you know, is not going to point out these things in you, but is going to listen to you sort of speak them out. So these things in the recesses of our heart that we haven't given voice to,
right,
a spiritual director, a spiritual companion can listen those things out into being. I'm a big believer of this. It's just saying something aloud and hearing it for yourself. It's like it comes out of that dark place and like out into the open and just dissipates.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, once you hear it, it's like, oh my gosh, like now that I've spoken it, it's almost like I'm relieved of it.
Yeah. It is. The load is lifted. Yeah. There is more light than that. Mm-hmm. Once it's said out and you can share it with another. You know, I think that's why 12-step programs are so important and flourishing. They demand that rigorous honesty and acceptance there, you know. There is more truth spoken than in many religious institutions sometimes.
Yeah. You know? Can we come back to the technology question for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Can you talk about the ways in which technology is changing spiritual companionship?
Yeah.
And that can be, you know, ways in which it's helpful and ways in which maybe we should be mindful.
Yeah. You know, someone told me, you know, reminded me that in ancient times, a lot of spiritual companionship was done through letters, because you couldn't travel long distances to see someone. So many of the mystics and saints wrote letters to people, and it was through those letters that kind of spiritual companionship happened. Because you couldn't travel. There were no telephones, and travel was difficult to do that. You know, when I started doing this work, people were saying, I can't do this by phone, or I can't do it by Skype or Zoom. That just wouldn't. I need that much more physical presence.
Yeah.
And this is a long time ago. One of my directees moved to another country, and we agreed that till she found someone, we would continue. So we started doing it by Skype. And, it was a small learning curve. So that's a very small way in which there are spiritual companions today who won't do it that way. So there is a resistance to even simple ways of doing that. But if you go back to our history, it happened in so many different ways to do it. So it's not a new thing.
Yeah.
And I learned through experience, it works just as well on Skype or Zoom. There was one place where they didn't have good connection, so we did it on the phone, and that worked well.
Mm-hmm.
I know there are some people who've tried doing it online through texts and emails. I am still not quite sure about that. But, I think the way technology is advancing, it can work.
Yeah.
We have to be open to it. I typically won't see someone by Zoom or Skype till we've met at least once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
Just to and then I see my own spiritual director occasionally by Zoom, because the driving distances can be daunting sometimes. So
yeah.
I know it works.
Yeah.
And I think more advances have been made in the area of education and community through technology. I think the webinars that SDI does have been so successful. And now the podcasts, they are a vehicle for connection, for self-care, for community, for education. I've taken part in at least one webinar through SDI, and it really worked, and I've watched several. Tell you one thing we did, which shows how even community can happen. I think it was after, I'm ashamed to say, there have been so many tragedies. I think it was after the Pulse shooting or the synagogue shootings. So many spiritual directors, my own friends who are spiritual companions, we were struggling with, the pain of that and the horror of that. And so many people were coming to us processing what they were going through with all these things. So we knew there was such a need for spiritual companions to gather. And I had found that in my own small circle. I have three or four of us. We are on the phone at least once every 2 or 3 weeks for that kind of care and community. So we wanted to try something different. And we worked with SDI. And Stephen Crandall set up. There were three of us. And we advertised it briefly, saying, this is the time when you can come and just share what's going on because of this incident with you. We had a little bit of reading, little music, some quiet. And, then people would speak, and we asked them to stay silent for a little while, then someone else spoke. We had no idea how that could work. It worked beautifully. People shared their deepest things, and they got a chance, like you were saying, to voice what they were feeling and feel there were others listening and were with them. These are people who didn't know each other, couldn't see each other. But for that little time, we were there with each other. We stood with each other, and we were connected in our collective grief and anger and uncertainty and hope to do that. So in that case, technology got people from so many different places to have a moment of hope. You know, so it can work. It does work. And, you know, I'm not always an early adopter of it. So it's a learning process for me.
Yeah. I remember that call. I was on it. And I mean, I just called in to listen. And I can tell you, like, it is a gift for people, you know, just to be able to know that, like, the SDI community was here and present and willing to open a channel, you know, open a line of communication to be together. That was what you and Cynthia and Karen offered, was just that line. You know, telephone is strange. Like, I saw a conference call, you know, it's not like you're just talking to one person. You're on the line with a few dozen people. I remember times where you invited people to just speak one word or phrase, and they would just kind of come in, you know, audibly, and people would talk over each other because you don't know, you can't see people. So it's not, but there's still just, I just remember being really moved by those spaces just to, you know, hear the collection of voices, to hear, you know, hear three or four voices talking at the same time. And it's almost like, you know, you're not like, okay, wait, one at a time. And, you know, say your name first. That wasn't important, right? It wasn't the thing. It was just to hear people and to be together.
Yeah.
It was powerful.
I hope we do more like that. I think it can be another way to build community. And that need is so great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and a gift for people to be able, yeah, to know that, hey, there's this line. I'm gonna call on this conference call, and I'm just gonna, maybe I won't say anything. I'll just sit here and listen.
Yeah,
it's good work. It's good work that you do, and good work that our companions do, and our members do. I'm having fun, but I don't want to keep you too long. Is there anything that I haven't brought up that you feel like should be spoken about?
Just an encouragement to spiritual companions, directors. You're not alone. Join SDI, reach out to people, find out how you can be part of this great adventure. You won't regret it. There is an openness to newness and honoring the past. There's room for all of us together. So my encouragement is join us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I plug the conference real quick?
Yes, please.
Because I think, well, and this is not isolated. This is, you talked about having been to at least a dozen conferences, and we were talking about technology and some of the mediation challenges of spiritual companionship, and how important face-to-face time is, and your invitation just now to spiritual companions. And so the conference, our annual conference, is really our big push to bring people together face to face. Can you share just briefly about the benefits of going to a conference? Because I am appreciative of the big financial ask that it is, the hardship, the travel, the, you know, everything involved with having to make a conference happen for somebody. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, the first time I walked into the conference, it blew me away. The scope, that there were so many at that place. I think there were 300 or 400 spiritual companions gathered together. So it was like I found my tribe. I found my community. I met so many interesting people from different parts of the world. And then the speakers line up, speakers I had read about or who had been my teachers through books and other ways, to hear them live, to get a chance to ask mm-hmm. them questions. And then some of the innovative workshops and things that I learned from people who were doing this kind of work on the margins and what that looked like. Since I teach in formation programs, I met with other people who work in formation programs and learned what methodologies they use, what were the best practices to do that. So it was, you know, that kind of community, and I've made lifelong friends there. I've found a place to continue my own education and care through that, and be inspired by so many individuals, not just the teachers and speakers, but members of SDI. So I encourage all our students and interns, join SDI. Even the newsletters, the magazines, the webinars, you have access to so much. But enter this community as you begin this work. Yeah. Enrich your work and your life.
Hmm. And it's true. I can vouch for it. I've been to a total of 2 conferences, and I was pretty brand new to when I came out to St. Louis, and you and an infinite amount of people were so welcoming and instant friends, instant relationships, meaningful relationships. I felt at home at my first conference too. Yeah. I didn't know what I was getting into. at the time. But it's true. It's really true. Yeah. So I know you contribute to that space.
And especially this conference in Santa Fe, the place is so beautiful. Mm. I teach right outside of Santa Fe, so I go there a lot.
Yeah.
And I think the lineup of speakers is amazing.
Yeah, it's a pretty good group that we have. We just confirmed Father Richard Rohr today.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so he'll be making an appearance too. So yeah, along with Sister Joan Chittister and Dr. Barbara Holmes and the others. So
Barbara Holmes is an amazing teacher. She, so we have a great group.
Yeah, it's going to be good. And they're always good. They're always good, regardless of the presenters. Just you're there. There's people like you there. There are just kind, friendly people who want to get to know you. Why wouldn't you want to hang out with a bunch of people who are deep listeners? It's the easiest group of people to be around. well, thank you so much for your time, Ravi. It's such a joy to talk to you, and we should do this again.
Is it possible to make a genuine soul connection with someone who practices a different religion from you, or who believes different things from you, or who has a different worldview or a different set of politics? How can we do this work? At SDI, we strive to create a diverse body, but we don't have all the answers here. What is yours to do? One practical task Ravi suggested is just to ask someone out for coffee, someone outside of your own community. I hope that you might try that and help us to figure out how to do this public square of spiritual companionship that we are striving for. This is Matt Whitney with Spiritual Directors International. Thanks again for listening. Your time and your presence here are deeply appreciated. If you liked this show and would like us to continue making them, please do subscribe now while it's fresh on your mind. Also, we would love to hear from you, so please feel free to send in your comments and suggestions to the email address podcast@sdiworld.org. To learn more about spiritual companionship and ways that you can plug in and join our community, visit us at our website at www.sdiworld.org. Thank you. Blessings and peace on your day, and may you share blessings and peace to others.